Hey, Greg, have you heard about the show on AMC called Breaking Bad?
Yes, but before I talk about that...
You really should watch it. I think it's a good show, and I think you'll like it.
I don't know.
That's a conversation we had.
Yeah?
Several years ago.
Yeah.
I found it before he did. Yes!
Yes. We just started our post show. You know what that means.
Amazon. Slow week on AA.
That's okay. I understand. You know, new fiscal year, government shutdown. Yeah.
We have a lot of federal employees. Yeah. Actually, we shouldn't joke. I think JD is technically a federal employee, so...
So, I may have to go back in time a little bit to get some interesting stuff, although maybe not.
Logged in here. I'm probably going to say... Well, the problem is we can't just say, like, the last quarter because the last quarter is the last week.
Yeah.
So. I'm going to do orders report so we get everything. Oh, I got mine. Just because of the name. Came in yesterday. The Silver Zork 100 Count Cork for Winemaking. Zork. It's this... I don't know what it is. I don't know how it works. I think it's kind of... combination cap slash the shrink wrap thing you put outside the wine bottle. It has this little peely thing you peel off it. The silver one looks like it's lead, which I find interesting.
Yes, I doubt it's lead.
I use lead to cap my bottles. It's $39.99 for a 100 count of these caps for making wine. It actually gets a perfect rating with one customer review. Let's look at the review. Kelly says, I decided to make my own wine and couldn't decide on what kind of closures I wanted until I came across Zorks. I ordered 300 initially, 100 each of silver, burgundy, and green, and I just bottled my 90th bottle with success with the silvers. I will absolutely be ordering again these highly recommended product. I will just make sure you measure your bottles with a caliper to ensure the correct fit. They say they do not work on champagne bottles, just the standard wine bottle. They don't have pictures of what they look like installed or how to install them. And they say you can use them for corking your bottles and then for resealing tasting bottles. And you don't need a corker, but it's the Zork.
The Zork. 100 count. Thank you, whoever bought that. The next thing, the big thing I want to bring up, but there's two things that I'm kind of interested in. The first is something that actually you have. I don't know whether it's whether it's the 60th birthday version or not.
The beer hammer.
Yes, the beer hammer, which is a hammer, but it at the other end of it, the thing that usually pries
the
out
claw,
nails,
the claw
is a bottle opener.
I got that for my 30th birthday. And the label looked exactly... I don't think the label says 60th birthday.
No,
I think
doesn't.
Just the Amazon listing says 60th birthday. Yes, but somebody bought the beer hammer as a joke. As a gag gift for somebody who might be turning 60.
Maybe. Well, but you said something about you like the name. Well, I like the name of this. Good night construction site. Plush toy. 11 inches.
We bought that for my nephew.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, so that's a Jeff Bear purchase.
That's a Jeff Bear purchase. No longer anonymous.
No. But I like the name of it, and I like how it's got a little
There's a book
little crane with a moon on it.
Yeah, we bought the book too, and the plush toy goes with the book. So
okay.
There's a book called Good Night Construction Site. Heather knows about it. I don't know so much, but it's for our nephew Noah.
Well, good night construction site. And is there anything? So it's, since that's you,
did that show up under earnings?
Nope.
Oh, son of a gun.
Someone likes barbecue sauce.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
Bone sucking sauce. I've seen this in the store, in our Giant Eagle and stuff like that. It's actually in a mason jar type thing. But it's a barbecue sauce that voted best barbecue in America 2 years in a row. looks like one of the more, it looks like one of the kind of, what was it, more Texas type barbecue sauce where it's ketchup, which tomato based,
right,
as opposed to like a Carolina one where it's sort of mustard based.
Well, Carolina is vinegar based.
Vinegar based.
There's the South Carolina, which is mustard based, okay, which is my personal favorite, right, but it's really hard to find unless you like make it yourself.
Well, I mean, I imagine Amazon would have.
They might.
Yeah.
They might, but I've had some in Virginia. And I've made some myself, but that's the only time I've had the mustard sauce, but it's my favorite.
But, yeah, I mean, if you like your sauces, and the only thing I dislike about barbecue sauce, the only thing, because I think they're great, well, okay, two things. The first is overuse. I think there's a tendency to overuse it sometimes, and you lose some of the flavor, mm-hmm, or something. If you use it judiciously, then it can be great. But the other thing is there's a lot of sugar in them. I like to avoid really sugary sauces.
Right.
But other people are not me. And so thank you for purchasing your bone sucking sauce through our little thingy.
Sounds good.
All right.
Zork.
Zork.
That's not a CBR approved product yet until I've actually seen a Zork, because it just doesn't make, I don't know how it actually functions. So.
I meant to bring this in to you today, but I forgot. I have some of it, though, because there's a place nearby me that sells it. Alton Brown recently on his podcast, like 2 weeks ago, did something, because I've been listening to it piecemeal, but he did something about it, the top 10 spices you would have.
Okay.
And one of them is, he called it sumac, but I think it's pronounced sumach. Okay. It's a Mediterranean Persian spice.
Is it from like a sumac tree, or
I don't know where it's from, honestly. But it's really interesting. It's what they put on kebabs and stuff. Okay. It has a little bit of a paprika and a little bit of a lemony character to it.
Talking about Alton Brown, quick rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Talking about his pronunciation. I was watching Cutthroat Kitchen. I only saw two episodes.
I find that really, really an awful show.
I don't find it awful. It's a hard show because of the purchasing, the trials, right?
Yeah, but it just seems like people being awful to each other as opposed to really competing on merit.
But Alton was hard set to calling it Bologna instead of Bologna. Bologna, Bologna. It just sounded like so awkward. I don't know. Maybe it's the right way, but it just sounds.
I think it probably is the right way. It's probably like the Italian way. It's mm-hmm. probably Bologna, you know.
Right.
And then for some reason, you know, it gets.
But it wasn't good Bologna. It was American deli, right, bologna, right, and he was calling it Bologna over and over again. I like Alton. Everyone who listens to the post show should know that I'm an Alton fan.
Mm-hmm.
I like his podcast. However, the one I just listened to a couple days ago about the suit guy.
Yeah, the menswear thing. I just turned that off when he said, it's not going to be about food, it's going to be about menswear. All right.
I actually listened to it.
Oh, God.
I listened to it for maybe, I don't know, not completeness, but I'm like, I couldn't connect, right? Yeah. I just, like, you know, Alton's a spiffy dressed guy, you know, and I kind of like his bow ties and his tweed jackets and his fancy shoes and, you know, that guy, sure, it's for him. And they're talking about, like, he's talking about this Sid guy from Atlanta who's this dress guy, and they're talking about how Casual Friday is horrible for, like, business and, you know, for America and... And, like, people don't know who they are and how to dress. I'm like, I know who I am. I wear cargo shorts,
yeah,
and a t-shirt. That is me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Maybe there's a me that could wear a suit every day. Maybe there's a me that could wear a sports jacket every day. But I'm... And that, at the same point, they're talking about, like, you know, when you're into suits, paying $2,000 for a suit's not a big deal. I'm like... What? I'm never going to pay $2,000 for a suit.
Alton Brown makes a lot of money.
Sure.
So, you know, maybe when you get in, I think that there's a certain stratification where you get into a certain level of company, and then you're expected to sort of dress in a nicer way, just because that's the cultural thing that's right there. And yeah, I don't.
I can get liking dressed that way.
Yeah.
but like kind of throwing off that everyone's going to buy a $1,000 suit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
once in their life. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's, I mean, it sounds like it could be reasonable for most people, but not for everybody. I'm never going to buy a $1,000 suit. And unless things change, unless things change a lot. But
yeah, it was a little bit, I mean, but you know, but that's fine because it's Alton's podcast, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the thing we think of
now, the conversation he had with Sid, or was his name Sid?
I guess, I don't know.
The conversation. That's why I didn't turn it off. It was a good conversation, you know. It's kind of the he's on the Nerdist Network, mm-hmm. and this was just like Chris Hardwick talking to whoever, but just about suits the whole time. It was a good conversation. It didn't bore me, you know. It's like our poo show, right? I mean, it's just a conversation, so it kept me enough to keep it going. So,
well, I mean, we
it should have been a brown cast pusher.
We don't spend an hour on it.
It should have been a brown cast post show,
right?
But
so yeah, Sumach is or Sumach is a. I'll bring it. I'll try to remember to bring it next time. It's really an interesting spice. It's really good. It's really good with savory applications. It goes great with chicken. Goes great with other things. I think you'd really enjoy it.
Okay.
It's only like $4 for a big tin of it. So you're a big, you know, I don't know, plastic thing. I had a shaving cream disaster.
Shaving cream disaster.
It was a gel thing, but anyway, but I guess I pressed the thing wrong, and it started just come out and just foam all over.
How much did you get? Like a bucketful?
It turned into something like that. Yeah, I mean, I had to throw it away, but it was like still going and going and going. So,
I mean, with my shaving cream, right, you'll push it and it'll leak afterwards. Like it'll leak like a good half inch.
Yeah. Well, somehow what happened was that it instead of just going in the part where it would leak out, it went all around the top. So I pushed it wrong or something, and just burst all out of the top, and then you know
it burst all out of that shit.
Yeah, and then it just fills a huge volume. So it was just funny to be like, wow, this is still going, huh? Google will save us all.
Will they?
Did you read about the Google life extension?
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
So you're doing some, I forget what it's called, Calico or something like that, where they want to extend people's lives up to 30 years. Not for us, unfortunately, but for the next generation of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe they'll be successful and they'll get the fast track.
Maybe. All right, do you want to go into Breaking Bad now?
Yeah, I think we should go into Breaking Bad.
Let's pause for a second so I can empty and then we can spend some time.
All right, so I just told Greg, you know, I'm going to miss the story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can get into the details, but really, can you name any other series that have wrapped up as gracefully or as well as they did? I mean,
do you think they really wrap it up gracefully?
I mean, compared to how series are normally wrapped up, I think they did a tremendous job.
It's better than Lost, I'll give it that.
It's better than almost everything. That's
better
the thing.
Better than BSG.
It's hard to wrap up a series. Sopranos, it's hard to wrap up a series. I mean, the only other one that's in the ballpark is Six Feet Under, and you know, they basically showed everything to the end when everyone died, you know, and that was a very satisfying ending, I thought. Better than The Shield, better than, I mean, there's a lot that were cut short, you know. I just think they did
I mean, all I've heard is that The Shield was great. I haven't watched The Shield, so I don't know. The Wire had a good ending, right? I mean, it maybe went on a little bit, like if it would have ended on the fourth season, it would have been almost incredible.
Right.
But it went a little long. Here's the thing about the Breaking Bad ending. You know, we've had a week to think about it, and we wanted to have that week to really think about it. You know, I think that there's some consternation about the ending because everyone thinks it wrap things up, or they're not everyone, but people, some people think it wrap things up too neatly into a bow. And
I don't know. The same people would be bitching about not enough being wrapped up if they didn't, you know?
Well, not the same people, but other people would be. I think that there's some merit to that, but, you know, I think that the way I look at it, the last two episodes are somewhat... No.
Okay.
The antepenultimate, the third to last episode, I think is really the climax of the show. Mm. It's really what the show was leading to the whole time. Ozymandias, where all his... everything that he built is lost. And... sort of, and the last two episodes are kind of an extended coda, kind of a denouement of the story. So they're like,
I think that's fair. I don't think that's a problem, right? I mean, you can't climax and end in the same hour, you know. It's just,
well, you could, but I think that if you look at it that way, it makes more sense and it follows through better. It is a little. I agree with the idea that it wrapped up everything a little bit too neatly. It gave an out for people who still wanted Walt to be a hero when he wasn't. It gave an out for people who still wanted Jesse to have some semblance of a life, which I mean, after all that he's been through, I don't imagine how he could have anyway. It didn't necessarily make everything right, but it gave some level of closure that was somewhat too neat for a show that loved to get messy. And that was sort of what people were saying about it. And what I kind of agreed with that. I'm not saying that it was a bad finale by any stretch of the imagination, but do I think it was fantastic?
I mean, that was so what you just said, a little too neat for a show that is so messy.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably my initial thought the night last Sunday,
mm-hmm,
when you left. But the more I thought about it, I found it very satisfying. I mean, you got the major points. Walter had to die. You know, it was a promise from the first episode,
right,
that he was going to die in the series. He had terminal cancer. If he got a pass on that, it would have been riots in the streets. I mean, did you get to listen to any of the podcasts?
Mm.
Oh my God. So when they introduced the M60 in the first episode, when they introduced the ricin, they had not written... they didn't even have a real arc on how that was going to wrap up.
Mm-hmm.
It's, if you listen to Vince talk about how this came together, you're like, maybe that's why I'm a little more warm, because I heard them and he's brainwashed me into thinking.
Well, I mean,
the way they put it together is just...
I've read about how they did that a lot on this show where they would back themselves in the corners and they would then write themselves out of it.
Yeah,
and
I mean, it's amazing that they didn't have this all... in their heads.
Yeah.
The way it finished up, like, seeing how it finished up and knowing that it wasn't the grand plan,
mm-hmm,
you're like, you know, that's how I feel about it after that point. But I was, even before I heard the podcasts, I was satisfied about...
Well, I understand that, because, I mean, I think that if you're telling a story, especially one where it's... you're doing it episodically, as you're writing, you let the characters tell the story to you, in a sense. Mm-hmm. It may differ from your grand plan. It may go in wild different directions because of things that you put in there, and then especially and that's just for writing. And now you have to take into what actors bring,
mm-hmm,
and what cinematographers and other people and directors bring into the show, which add other layers and other levels of, mm-hmm, things. So all of a sudden you get thrown into different directions.
Yeah. So, you know, Uncle Jack didn't exist when they introduced the M60.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't written yet.
Hmm.
He wasn't a plot point. So they didn't know that they were going to use the M60 on the Nazis when they introduced the M60. They called it Chekhov's gun, right? Chekhov, the Russian playwright.
Right.
Would, you know, that, yeah, basically in the first act commit to something, and have
the,
to.
The story behind Chekhov's gun is that if you show a gun in Act One, it has to be shot in Act Three. What he's saying is not that is not really about guns. What he's saying is everything on screen or everything in the play, in the sense, everything that is featured has to be resolved as a plot point.
And that's where Lost fell apart, right? I mean, Lost introduced, but when you listen to the Breaking Bad Insider podcast, the last three episodes, you might give the Lost guys a little bit of a pass because they were doing the same, writing themselves into corners. You know, they didn't know they were going to go so many seasons, you know, like,
but Lost had the advantage of introducing magical stuff.
Yeah.
And Breaking Bad
there's things Breaking Bad didn't tie up. Like, Gustavo Fring was one of Pinochet's badasses or something.
Yeah.
They opened that door and they never wrapped that one up. Right,
right. Yeah. I mean, so it's not like everything is wrapped in an epo. Like I said, I mean, you know, what's Jesse going to do now? I mean, he got away, but I mean,
Vince says Jesse gets to Alaska, so.
Okay.
He likes to think that Jesse got away.
But, you know, Walter Jr. Flynn hates his father. He may get some money, but you know that issue is never going to be repaired. How is he going to spend that money? You don't know. What's going to happen with the Skyler thing? She has a little bit more leverage with the DA now that they have the bodies, but that's not going to help her that much. He's still destroyed his family in the process.
Well, I mean, I mean, if you don't do the 6 Feet Under finale where you take everyone to their death and show them living old and happy or old and sad or whatnot, you're not going to wrap all that up, right? So, I mean, 6 Feet Under did a very good way of actually taking every storyline to its conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that more than once, though. You know, if another show does the same thing, it's just going to be like, oh, just like 6 Feet Under, you know? So you can't do that again with Breaking Bad. You can't show Walter Jr.
I'm not saying that you should. I'm saying that there are loose ends for even for those people who think that everything was totally wrapped up in a bow. However, I do agree that it was, like I said, a little less sloppy than the rest of Breaking Bad would have implied. We enjoyed watching it. I remember.
Mm-hmm. You know why it was less sloppy is it was a new version of Walter White. It was Walter White version 4 or version 5. He was no longer Heisenberg.
Right.
He was no longer maniacal. He was calculating, calm, and cool, and he executed his plan. And, you know, it was a new version of Walter. And when that music kicked on in the penultimate episode, when he saw the Grey Matter guys on TV, he changed into a new person. And he was flawless. He executed his plan to a T at that point.
Well, let's remember that there was still, I mean, well, I, one of the
other
lines,
than not killing Jesse, which was part of his plan.
Well, no, but I was getting something else, but because one of the favorite lines that Jesse had in an episode where he was talking to Hank was when he said he's smart, whatever, and he's lucky. And that really helped because when he got into that car in New Hampshire and he couldn't jumpstart it, but the keys were in the visor. He was lucky. Mm-hmm. So he had, you know, if he wasn't lucky at that point, if there wasn't that, frankly, contrivance, because I don't think people do that.
There's the, you know, he entered the car and the snow didn't fall off the window.
Uh-huh.
He, at the end, when he's victorious, he bangs the window, the snow falls off. There would have been evidence that door had been opened.
Yeah.
And the cops who were shining the spotlight on the car would have seen that the door had been recently opened with the way the snow was. It would have ended right there, right? So, I mean, that was something I didn't want to share with you last week before I had more time to reflect on it. But that was definitely something that I had seen, like, oh, he was going to get... He should have got caught because he scraped off a little corner, saw the door was unlocked. He opened the door, he closed the door, and none of the snow fell off the window.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, he's like, gives it the Fonzie elbow bump, boom, and all the snow falls off because he's victorious, you know?
Yeah, a little cheap. And I think that's the problem people are having with it. A little cheap. Throughout the show, everything in that last episode was a little cheap in some way. And
they only had 40-some minutes.
Yeah, no. Well, no, they had 60 minutes because they made everything was 75 minutes in the last two episodes. So they did have extra time.
There was five acts in the episode.
Yeah.
And the one thing I would have liked to have seen, like if time was not a factor, and they probably would have done if time was not a factor. You mentioned it. He was going to cook one more batch. It was going to be like the perfect batch, and then he would die. But they couldn't.
Did I mention that?
We kind of talked about that. Like he's going to, like when he was in the lab, right at the end, right before he died, we're like he's going to cook again.
You know? One thing,
but we didn't realize how much time was left or how over the on time it was. There was just no time. Yeah. But
I mean, I love the suspense in the Grey Matter people's house. That was really great. And then as soon as the light shined on, I said, "Oh, those aren't really snipers. Those are somebody." Then you said, "Maybe it's Badger and Skinny Pete," and sure enough, it was. And so that was great.
That was definitely awesome.
And then, you know, as soon as I saw the Lydia and saw the stevia, I was like, that's ricin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. They had never, that wasn't a arc either.
Right.
They didn't introduce ricin. They didn't introduce the chamomile tea with soy milk and the stevia as a vehicle for the ricin. They just made that fit later on. And the one angle that was backported, they knew, how are they going to get Walter to answer Todd's phone after Todd's dead? So they had to introduce Todd having this quirk of having all these topical ringtones, right? Because in the previous episode, Walter had heard the science ringtone, right? Or something like that. Or maybe they said that. Did he hear it? But they introduced it to the audience, so it didn't seem weird. So in the bunker, Lydia's ringtone said Lydia, right?
Yeah.
So like Walter would know, oh, I want to answer this call and rub it in that she's dying. But to introduce it to the audience, the previous episode or two episodes previous, there was the weird science ringtone for Walter. So it was just this quirk. I love the Todd. I hate the Todd character, but I love the Todd character because he's so psychopathic, but.
But as like an open, like the innocent side to it.
He has this kind side, but the kind doesn't go very far.
Right.
He's so kind and so psychopathic, and he has this ringtone quirk, and it was such a cool character. It seemed as if he wanted to be Jesse's friend his slave owner, you know? With the ice cream scene. They actually didn't talk in the podcast. They didn't talk about the ice cream scene. I wanted to hear them talk a little bit more about the ice cream scene and just talk about Todd's demeanor and mindset. Cause I just thought it was wonderful.
Yeah. Todd was a really engaging character because it was, you hated him, but you also were like, but he's so charming and almost innocent about it.
Yeah, I mean, the Opie thing, you know, with Andrea is like, hey, you know, and then pow, the most brutal thing you could imagine, killing a mother where her son's inside sleeping. Oh, it's crazy.
Just want to know, this isn't personal.
It's crazy. But he's so warm, like he wants to be Jesse's friend, but
wants to be everybody's friend. He wants to be with Lydia and she's not going for him, but you know, Lydia had a kid, right?
Yeah,
that was threatened at one point, or she was threatened, Lydia is now dying of ricin poisoning, and so that kid is gonna have a similar situation to Brock.
Vince said in the podcast that, an M60. Is not made to gun down a woman. You know, they had to find someone more worthy of an M60. Uh-huh. So that's where the Nazis came from. You know, an M60 is great for gunning down neo-Nazis, but not for a woman. So, you know, they worked in the rice and, you know, the whole Lydia thing. They kind of said, no, we're not going to shoot her, you know, and no, he's not going to go postal on Grey Matter, you know, just because, or, you know, they kind of were kicking around an idea where there was going to be a shootout with the cops, but you know, that's just not Walter, even in his worst Heisenberg, he doesn't gun down good guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they had to really work out how it was going to happen.
Well, I like the introduction of the neo-Nazis, because it sort of it enforced that, you know, especially once Gus was out of the picture, mm-hmm. everything really did fall apart, and there are really some terrible, terrible characters getting involved, you know, in this stuff. And that's, you know, and he couldn't, you know, Walt couldn't control like Gus did, even though he had delusions of grandeur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he didn't have a handle on it. Couldn't. Well, it's just like dictators, right? It's this whole, you know, we depose Saddam Hussein and Iraq's, you know, sectarian violence. You know, it's that kind of thing. It's just in the drug world of Southwest America. The massage chair. An undulating of the massage chair. Oh my God, was that so funny.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's dead and he's up and down and up and down. There's some humor in there. I'm just giddy. It was so good. I want to watch it again now after talking about it.
It was a very good
show. I want to watch the last three episodes end to end after talking about it. I just think from the... I can never remember the name. What's called the poem? What's that called?
Ozymandias.
Ozymandias. So good.
Yeah. Did we talk about P versus MP in the...
I don't know. We've talked about P versus MP a million times.
Well, the interesting thing is, you know, I've been telling you to watch Elementary because I think it's really, really good for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually did a show that featured P versus MP, and they mm-hmm. didn't do a horrible job with it.
Huh.
They explained it pretty well. They did a good job with that. They did their research.
I was listening to a little bit of Science Friday yesterday, and they're talking about encryption in the NSA, and they had Phil Zimmerman from PGP on there, and mm-hmm. two other guys. And I want to just scream at the radio.
Why? What did they talk about?
They had good people on. But they still made it sound like the NSA can crack whatever they want. You know, the Science Friday, not popular reporting of math, and they messed it up. And I'm still mad. I'm so mad. I'm like, why do you have these assholes on? Get
the security guys have an agenda, and. And so I really...
Then Science Friday should have realized that. They should be smart enough to not have those agenda people on. You know, Steve Gibson can be a bit of an alarmist at times, but he has the right tone on this whole security thing. And I forget who he's quoting on this, but basically trust the math. You know, if you use good math,
mm-hmm.
trust the math. The NSA's... Now, this is a bit of faith, but the NSA can't factor prime numbers yet. Right.
Right.
Trust the math. The way he described the NSA influencing the prime random number generator that NIST published as one of the standards mm-hmm. as the worst standard because it's 1,000 times slower than other prime random number generators and nobody should ever use this. He made it sound a little more diabolical than it was. But then again, RSA did use that prime random number generator. And I think it was Phil Zimmerman. I couldn't tell who was talking at the time. But he was talking about like, RSA actually used that. Why did they use that? I don't want to be the one to say. I can't say. But he's like, okay. And Ira Flatow is like, okay, what would other people say? He's like, they receive compensation to use that as their default prime random number generator. It is technically RSA has good crypto cryptographers on staff, and it's common knowledge and public knowledge in cryptographer circles that the NSA's elliptic curve prime random number generator has some constants
mm-hmm.
that were picked out of somewhere and are. They're just constants, and there is a pair of secret constants that theoretically exist for that prime random number generator. There are other prime random
generators. Still takes a huge amount of computing power to break something.
No, no, no. If you have these other constants, you can basically reverse engineer the elliptic curve. It's a backdoor. Allegedly a backdoor. Theoretically a backdoor. When there are other PRNGs, prime random number generators, that are 1,000 times faster, they don't rely on this static constant, which has a corollary constant. And everyone, you know, OpenSSL, all these other places, any place that uses elliptic curve cryptography does not use the NIST published NSA one. RSA did. It was the default cipher for all their shit. And it is exasperating. And for the people in the crypto circles, it boggles their minds that this was selected. When it was published, it was common knowledge that it was the poorest of all the options. Mm-hmm. And and RSA used it.
Well, maybe there's some...
And RSA employs smart people, smart cryptographers. So it is almost certain, not in a scientific standpoint, but almost certain in a layperson standpoint, that there was a reason they chose it, and the reason was influenced by the NSA.
Right, yeah. Now, I mean, you don't have to pay everybody off at RSA, right? You just pay one or two people who have influence and get them to be arguing. Or there is the idea.
Now, this was the default. You could go in and change an option to change the prime random number generator, but the default was the shitty slow one. Uh-huh. It's almost infuriating. It's like, what the fuck, RSA?
Well, about the NSA trying to break into Tor and successfully doing it?
Well, Tor was an NSA project.
Yeah.
They created the Tor idea. But you mean when they broke in, you're talking about the whole JavaScript...
I don't know. I've just been reading stuff about how there's the people who are behind Tor saying the NSA broke into it and they tried to stop them. And the NSA has found...
So there's the Tor browser, and it's a Firefox... It's a locked version of Firefox, but it had a flaw that they were using in the Tor network to find... Well, maybe this isn't the NSA thing, but they were... It's probably an FBI thing. They were using this known flaw to track down child pornographers. So it probably wasn't an NSA thing. It was an FBI thing. But they were basically putting malware out on Tor sites to do this kind of thing. It's been a couple weeks. I don't have all the details fresh in my memory after drinking beers tonight. But that probably wasn't NSA. So I'm not sure I've heard the NSA Tor thing. But Tor was an American government thing to support subversion of other governments. Mm-hmm. They invented Tor. If it wasn't the NSA, it was like the Navy, Department of Navy or something like that invented it. And they put it out there open source, and now it's way for, you know, Chinese dissidents to do their stuff and whatnot. But I'm surprised if the NSA has good hooks into Tor. Tor is a really solid protocol.
You know, I'm never surprised by the idea that the NSA and groups like them are spying on us. That should never be a surprise to people. Because the NSA is not the only one doing it. It's just...
Oh, that's the thing that pissed me off most about... Sorry. The thing that pissed me off most about the Science Friday is one of the guys had the standpoint where... Like that. It's like, well, you know, maybe we should get used to the point that the government spies on us. And the security's there to keep everyone else from doing it. Nobody. Phil Zimmerman should have said, shut the fuck up. If there's one backdoor, it can be discovered by the other bad guys, right? If there's a theoretical backdoor, it's just a probability of being discovered by someone else, right? The whole Clipper chip that they wanted to put in encryption in the 90s. Problem with a backdoor is that it can be independently discovered by the other bad guys.
Right. Well, no.
So you can't keep... So encryption is only... Encryption, good encryption, when there's no theoretical backdoors, because if there's one key that can be discovered to unlock all everyone's encryption, what happens?
Well, I disagree with you completely that you should scream shut the fuck up. Because, I mean, that's the whole point is that, yeah, there are going to be always going to be groups that are going to be trying to break these things, and they will be successful because none of these things are ever going to, they have to be useful in some way. And in order for them to be useful in some way or useful in a large way, there are going to be ways to break them and crack
but
them.
But I'm talking about like mandated backdoors in encryption protocols.
Oh, no, I'm not necessarily saying that, but I am saying that
we
should get used to the idea that governments are spying on their people because they always have and they always will. This is not something new. It's just there's a new way of communicating, and of course, the government is going to be spying on it. The thing you have to get over is this idea this idea of pure privacy, which is a fallacy. It's just like anything pure, it's not going to exist. If someone wants to get into your data strong enough, they're going to find a way to do it. So you have to understand that, if you want something to be as secure as possible, then you don't put it on the internet. If you want something to be as secure as possible, then you do other things to it. But even then, there are ways somebody can get to it if they really need it, if they really want it.
No, I disagree with what you just said. There are ways to keep things secure. I mean, there's the stories of the Brazilian bad guy that had TrueCrypt on his drive and they couldn't crack it. Brazil couldn't, so they sent it to the FBI and they still couldn't crack it. And they couldn't coerce the guy to provide his key to unlock the hard drive. Their security, again, trust the math. If the security doesn't have a flaw or a backdoor, it is solid. And no amount of, unless there's still super secret prime number factorization happening at the NSA.
Well, they couldn't necessarily get his information, but they certainly could. I'm sure this Brazilian guy was strung up for other things. And so it wasn't like that, they couldn't get everything he did, but I'm sure they got some stuff. That's
irrelevant to the
encryption. No, it's not. It's
that's
not
irrelevant to the cryptography.
It's irrelevant to the point of the cryptography itself as a finite point, but it's not irrelevant to the whole conception of who you are as a person and what other people are capable of doing to you. And you are a part of a society that works on levels, a lot higher than you are. It's like you're a skin cell on your body and your body's going to do what it's going to do. And your skin cell doesn't really have much say in the matter.
Okay.
So I just think that there's a certain level where you're getting outraged. People are getting outraged about things that have always been true. And they're constantly getting outraged about the fact that these things that have always been true are still true because they've been, I think, led astray by people like Zimmerman that privacy is a click and a two clicks or three clicks away. That kind of thing is easy to do. No, it's not. And that there is such a thing as privacy in a
privacy world. Is easy to do. You use OTR chat with me all the time. Do you think that's crackable? It's not.
No, I don't think that the OTR chat is crackable, but I think that my head is crackable, and that if somebody were to jump on me and say, what have you been talking about with Jeff, and put a gun to my head, I'd be like, this and this and this. So, there are other ways around that situation. Just the cryptography is not going to stop you. Is not going to stop people from getting information that you want. Just a bank vault. Give people enough time and enough energy, and they'll find ways to do it. And usually, the best way to do it is not using computers, but it's using human. Going in there and just playing with people's minds, that sort of thing. Like half of, or was it 90% of hacking is social engineering, right?
Absolutely. I think most of the outrage is coming from the paradigm shift of the ease of collection, right? I mean, when everything was going through the postal service, you couldn't scan you couldn't correlate all that data, right? You can't hard copy letters. You can't scan and index and aggregate and have all that information. Where when things are electronic, it, you know, you can just have these massive databases of metadata to correlate people's phone calls and email records. Even with PGP encryption on email, you still have the metadata. You still have the to, from, and subject.
You still have the metadata. You can do that with mail. You can see where mail came from and where it went to.
And the to and the from. Even with your encrypted email, you still get the to and the from.
Even with snail mail, you can do that.
You can't. The NSA can't collect it on a grand scale.
Why not?
The logistics are absurd.
Why are the logistics?
You're going to have every mail processor in the country indexing every letter they touch and putting it into a master database.
Put it into some sort of machine that does it. I mean, they already have machines that test that check for, you know, chemical traces and things like that. Why couldn't they take individual pictures of the mail and index those?
Got a point there, I guess. But the the metadata, I guess, could be indexed, right? Because you have all, you know, everything is put into a barcode for the delivery and all that stuff. Okay. Yeah, I guess your mail metadata is probably not private. You're not opening the payloads, but...
Yeah. And your phone data certainly isn't private. And your GPS data, where you travel, you know, everyone now has a GPS device on them all the time. They use EasyPass to not just do...
You do need a subpoena for that kind of stuff.
Well, no, but they actually use EasyPass not simply for EasyPass tolling, but also they use it for traffic monitoring.
Right, but you could also be subpoenaed for your EasyPass data to see where you were you know, for a trial.
Yeah, you need a subpoena for that. Sure, yeah.
Time to go off the grid. No more craft beer radio.
You may be able to survive off the grid. I'm fine being on the grid. I'm fine with them knowing where I am, because I genuinely believe that I'm just not that important.
I just saw the other day Greg Cook is going to take 6 months leave of absence from Stone and go camping out in the blue, go off the grid for 6 months.
Whatever, man.
But apparently, I don't know. It it makes sense why he has the Grizzly Adams beard going now. But he's also going to shave the beard for charity, so I'm not sure which is happening first. So maybe off the grid is like going down to like Cabo or something like that. Like not answering tweets. That's a form of being off the grid, right? Not tweeting.
Yeah, I'm not. I could never do what Walter White did in the second to last episode. I can never do that. Just be in a cabin with two copies of Mr. Megorium's Magic Emporium.
I mean, the writers wanted to make it a thing, but I mean, like, what kept Ed from not bringing entertainment? You know, why didn't he have stuff to do? You know,
well, he said he wasn't a movie guy.
But Walter ordered other things. He could have ordered...
He probably did, but when he first got there, it wasn't set up for him to be, you know...
Yeah, had to wait a month.
Yeah.
They had to really cut the whole traveling in a propane tank scene. Like, they had scenes for him. He was, like, actually on the highway and stuff.
Oh, really?
They had to cut all that out because of time. And it would have been... Because, like, if you weren't paying attention, there was a scene where... His name was Ed, but it was only mentioned in the script, the disappearer guy. Mm-hmm. He's up in the vacuum shop talking on the cell phone about how hard the steel is. He's talking about the propane tank, right? Just a real quick scene. And then, you know, you see a scene later on where Walter's crawling out of the truck, you know, through the hidden manway for the propane tank. And, there was a lot more in there that got cut due to time, so.
I should check out this podcast then.
It's a very... it's not a misnomer saying it's the Breaking Bad insider. Vince is on every podcast, on Ozymandias. Bryan Cranston was on it. Mm-hmm. Aaron Paul was not on any of them because he was off shooting Need for Speed. But the host, Kelly, the editor guy, actually the show editor, TV editor, was the host of the podcast. He went and interviewed Aaron Paul and kind of stitched in his talks and things like that. So, I'm upset. Like when I rewatch the series, I'm going to incorporate the podcasts, but I only listened to the last three episodes of podcasts, and fantastic stuff.
Cool. Good stuff. Well, I think that's, enough for this week. We won't have a show next week because we're going to be in Denver. And then, we'll be back after that.
Oh yeah.
Party on.
Party on, Greg.
Party on, Jeff.